On the Mama Bear Dares podcast, we love and are encouraged by female podcasters giving helpful advice on motherhood. Mama Bear Dares aims to add to the conversation by turning the spotlight onto moms who have inspired us by doing big and bold things, in addition to being great mothers. We feature regular moms that you've sat next to at PTA meetings or smiled at while she tended to her screaming toddler in the middle of Target. These moms have started their own international nonprofits from their Lego-laced living rooms, they've come out of the other side of losing a loved one, and they've carved out time to produce breathtaking art. We dare to deep dive into what makes these women more than mom and boldly ask the questions that we've all been thinking.
So come with us as we share the stories of women who love being called mom, but have shifted the paradigm that aims to stop there. Artists, entrepreneurs, creative visionaries, social change agents, activists, all women who have tapped their mama bears and dared to live full, joyful, and layered lives. Mama Bear, we dare you to witness the ripples they've started and begin to create some of your own.
Hey, Mama Bears, welcome to the Mama Bear Dare podcast with your hosts, Tessie and Leslie. Today, we are speaking to Beth Johnson about the flow of generosity.
Yeah, we had a great conversation with Beth, and what we really talked about was just the way that her upbringing and her education and the books and different forms of media that showed up at different points in her life really affected who she has become as a woman and as a mother. And it was so wonderful to hear her be so thoughtful about really where she came from and where she's ended up.
I know one of the cooler parts for me was hearing her talk about the quiet ways of service her parents showed her. I tend to be a little bit louder in my acts of service for my kids just to make sure they're getting the point.
We are not quiet people.
No,
Tessie.
We're not. We started a podcast. I think that's clear. But but it inspired me to remember that our kids are paying attention. So you don't need to be in your face about it. And I'd rather my kids be really quiet about the ways they're serving the world than be kind of in your face and showy about it. So I don't need to be that way.
Yeah, and that she did talk a lot about how her parents just kind of led by example. Mm-hmm. She said she doesn't remember, you know, Gandhi quotes and Martin Luther King Jr. posters on the walls of her home. She just learned to care for the world just really by watching her parents, which was really neat to hear.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think one of my favorite things about Beth is that her whole life is an act of service. We didn't even get into the fact that she homeschools her children or anything like that, but she does. And so I feel like in all the minutiae of her life, it really just screams acts of service. And it's just really, really inspiring to watch. And I think it will translate well to our mama bears at home too.
Yeah, I agree. I think that when you listen to Beth, and as you're kind of thinking about what you might take from her life and apply to your own, is just that she's so creative in the way that she gives to this world. And we're, you know, talking a lot about that quietness about her. But that doesn't mean that she's not powerful, because she really has had a huge impact on so many people. But she walks in just this really humble way and does so many quiet, beautiful things. Just a quick story about her that we didn't discuss, and I was hoping it would come up during the podcast, but do you guys do May Day? Like, do you ever do May baskets?
We don't.
Oh, man. It's
did
one
you
of
really
my
have to ask me that?
Well, I didn't you think know. You did, but I wasn't sure. Well, it's something that I remember doing growing up. And then, you know, of course, like the kids and I have had a lot of fun doing it. It's very sneaky. It's on May 1st. And you just basically surprise your neighbor or friends with a little something at their door. But you don't want them to catch you. And so it's, you know, it's just very fun. So anyway, one distinct memory I have of Beth is on May Day, she had dropped off this plate of cookies and she put it on my front porch, like on the little patio table sitting there, and she rang the doorbell And then she just must have started just screaming down the block, just running down the block to her car. And later, I wasn't home at the time, but I later walked up to the house, and my neighbor, who they're a retired couple, and the woman was like, I don't know who it was or what she was doing, but someone parked their minivan all the way down the block and then snuck up to your house and left this tray of cookies and then ran away. And so, and you know, I mean, it was May Day, and apparently my neighbor wasn't like used
familiar
to that
with that. Yeah.
But that was sort of, I love that image of Beth, of just that.
I
mean, you couldn't be any stealthier in your service, right? Like, she's dropping off these cookies and then literally running away so she doesn't get caught.
That is so amazing.
So I think she is amazing. And we do talk a lot about kind of a life of service on this Mama Bear podcast. And Beth exemplifies that really in just, like you say, the minutia of every day. And I think Mama Bear should be reminded that there's a flow in your life. We talk about this flow of generosity, and that there are seasons where what you can pull off is maybe homemade cookies, but honestly, like, it might just be store-bought chocolate or a bottle of wine or a wish into the universe,
right,
a prayer, you know?
Right.
And then there are other times in life where you can really share it in bigger ways.
I also think one of the things I love about Beth is that she's open to the same kindness given to her. And I feel like a lot of times as moms, we just want to do it all ourselves, and we have a hard time asking for help and accepting help and accepting little graces. But Beth is so good at that. She talks at the end about acts of kindness she's received.
Yeah.
And I think it's like anything else. You have to be open to it, and you have to be aware of it, because just today Tristan has 10 friends over, God help me. And I was getting Little Caesars pizzas. I'm not afraid of that. And I'm walking out with these eight pizzas.
Oh,
you know, I'm walking out with them. And two of his friends are like, Miss Klipsch, what are you? I'll get them. And I thought, what? 13-year-old boys, like, that's a small act of kindness. They saw me struggling with these hot pizzas and came, you know. And Beth always seems open to receiving just as much as she's open to giving. And I feel like that is a lesson we can all take away as well.
Absolutely. I love how she talks about that at the end, how people have really touched her and her family in pretty unique and beautiful ways. So I 100% agree, sister, that's something that I hope all the Mama Bears take away of this podcast today, is just not only to give your life and give your love away, but just when other people are extending that generosity to you, you just look it in the eye and say thank you.
Yeah, receive it with a warm heart for sure. Mm-hmm. All right, should we get into the podcast?
Let's do it.
Almost 8 years ago, you, Leslie, were new in town and had the great idea to start a book club.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked at length in this podcast about our love of books and conversation, so it was kind of the perfect marriage of those two. I'd invited one of my friends, Kristen Sigler, to be a part of the book club, and on our first night together, she brought her neighbor, Beth.
Yes, and Beth is just such a lovely woman. She has this dark black hair, and she usually dresses in all black, and she has the most beautiful poet's heart.
Mm-hmm.
I knew as soon as I saw Beth that she and I were going to be friends. She loves talking about books, she loves talking about God, and she, like me, is a total night owl and is unapologetically unproductive during the ungodly early morning hours that most respectable women are awake.
Like me. I'm a morning person.
Yeah.
That first night at book club, Beth showed me pictures of her twin boys, Elliot and Russell, who were waiting for her in Korea. I was waiting for Tariku at the time, and we ended up bringing our boys home within months of one another.
Yeah, it's amazing when you get together a group of women. The connections that can be made are just incredible. Together, I guess, since then, we've watched Beth and her husband, Jared, as well as their oldest, Thomas, who was adopted from Korea, and the twins as well, welcome their daughter, Lucia, home from Ethiopia. But even more than that, we've watched Beth as she has embraced the role of this quiet compassion and service.
Beth constantly amazes us with her generous spirit. Mm-hmm. She quietly volunteers at food pantries. She donates to shelters. She's the first person to pull out of her checkbook when you mention a cause that's dear to you, or if you tell her about a family in need. Mm-hmm. She pours wine for hours in the coldest corner of the water party that we throw each November. And we're totally making her blush right now, but we just want you to know that she is incredible, and she's also just so quiet and humble about the incredible things that she does.
It's so true. We feel like we know her well, but she does so much that it will not surprise me at all to hear that she does even more than we know or that we've mentioned so far. I can't wait to hear more about where this flow of generosity comes from and find out her tips on maintaining what seems to be an insane amount of energy for her mother self and her other self.
I agree. So let's do this, shall we? Let's welcome Beth to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. Welcome, Beth.
Thank you for having me. I just want to say for the record that I am still part of this book club that was started 8 years ago, and neither Tessie nor Leslie are in it. So, even though Tessie...
You're holding strong.
I am
held
strong.
That's so good.
8 years later,
that's
still
so great.
Holding strong. So.
Awesome. That is so great. Beth, as you heard in the introduction, we really do believe that you're one of the kindest, most generous people that we know. So let's maybe start talking a little bit about how this all got started, about where you're from, where you went to school. We know that your college education probably played a role in this. So just tell us a little bit more about you and the person you are.
Great. Well, I am a native to the Quad City area. I grew up in East Moline, and my mother is still living in the house that I was brought to home to, so some 43 years later, just from this area, glad now to call Davenport my home. My husband and I did live in Chicago for 10 years, and then after our first son came home from South Korea, we decided to come back to be closer to family. Mm-hmm. My mother-in-law is also nearby, so as I was thinking about this question a little bit, I was trying to think of what was happening to develop me into thinking about other people. Mm-hmm. And I think that in a big sense, that my parents were much older when they had me. My dad was 46 when I was born, and my mom was 43. I have an older sister that is 11 years older than I am. Mm. And so by the time I was 7, my father had retired from his job at John Deere and had decided to start volunteering at a food pantry run by Christian Friendliness, mm-hmm. which is a local not-for-profit that works primarily with children living in lower socioeconomic housing areas in some of the areas of the Quad Cities that are less desirable. Mm-hmm. So he started doing that and did that for 25 years. Simultaneously, my mom was volunteering at the same not-for-profit in a tutoring program, working with children after school. And so I saw them doing that in that capacity. What I think is interesting about them is they were also very quiet people. I wasn't growing up with like pictures of Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. and being filled with quotes of how we should help the poor. They just kind of did it. Huh. And my mom continues to do that. I mean, she's now 86, and I think it's kind of funny, but her and this woman who's 90 go and visit people in in hospitals and the elderly, even though they're so elderly, but they've been doing this together for years. So I think there was this kind of quiet bit of service that was going on. My parents are very quiet people, and so I think that was obviously shaping me, even though I didn't really mm-hmm. realize it.
Absolutely.
And then I also think as part of being in my high school youth group, we did go to Monterey, Mexico twice, and I was 15 and 17 at that time, and it was the first time that I really confronted poverty or seen poverty to the extent that it existed at that place and at that time. So then I went to Bible college, and I was in Chicago. I went to Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, and that also was eye-opening because growing up in the Quad City area, I was not really dealing with homeless people mm-hmm. On an everyday level, but being in Chicago and being in the area where Moody is, running into homeless people was an everyday occurrence. Mm-hmm.
And right, because it's right downtown.
It's right downtown, right? Mm-hmm. LaSalle in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And really right by Moody as well at that time was the Cabrini Green housing projects. And Moody had a connection with them. They had a Big Sister, Big Brother program. And I joined that and had a little sister and would frequently be interacting with her and then also be in Cabrini Green, which, again, just a totally different, a different perspective, a different eye-opening experience for me. So dealing with those issues, and then I think from more of maybe an intellectual point of view, my classes, I had a sociology class and a class called biculturalism. And those were, the teacher that taught the class was a former missionary and had a large family of children, some biological, mainly, actually, I think they were all adopted from internationally. Mm-hmm. And he really made sure that we understood the idea of white privilege was. Wow. So at that point, I mean, this is 20 years ago,
I
graduated.
I was just going to say, that's long kind time of ahead ago, of the, yes. Yeah.
And I remember reading the article for the first time and again thinking, oh my goodness, I never thought about what that meant. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I was aware that things were not right, but I didn't think about how I myself maybe contributed to that and just being naive to mm-hmm. that. And so the biculturalism class was really trying to look at different people groups and cultures and how they, what they value. So I remember we had to say, look at our own selves. Are you a time-oriented person or are you an event-oriented person? And look at ourselves, evaluate where we're at, and then look and realize that just because someone else is an event-oriented person, that does not mean they're good or they're bad. Mm-hmm. They're different. Mm-hmm. And so again, just like this opening up that there's ways that people interact and function within this world that are different than mine, but okay and mm-hmm. good. And I would also say, too, my senior year I was taking a class, Current Trends in Theology, and we watched an amazing movie about Archbishop Romero, who was in San Salvador, and he was martyred in 1980. He was serving the Mass, and he had become known as a person that really began to call out the government for their injustice. There were kidnappings and killings, and he really was calling out for that. And in response, was shot and killed while consecrating the Eucharist. Oh, and wow. I remember my teacher saying at that time, "What does your evangelical theology have to say to this?" Mm-hmm. And again, you're like, "Oh my goodness!" But again, just like this idea of realizing that people are in different places and different experiencing extremely different things mm-hmm. than I was, and a growing awareness that, you know, not everything is okay, and that we need as I think people of, and as of Christians, like, that we need to think about these things and be a little bit more deliberate in the way we act.
It's so interesting you say that, though, because I'm assuming there were 20 to 40 kids in that specific class.
Sure.
And I realize that I am a little skeptical when it comes to that sort of thing, but I just would be so shocked to hear that the rest of the 20 to 40 people ended up creating a life of service the way you have, even seeing the same thing. So I guess my question is, you heard that, you still consumed all of that the way they did, and yet, I don't know if it was because the way you were brought up or whatever, and it just kind of became this really remarkable fortitude, but you took that and actually did something with it, where some people might take that and say, well, gosh, it's hopeless.
It's a good question. I have thought many times, I mean, even, and not to get completely off track, I mean, you can, whatever, but I also studied Orthodox theology and also had 20 to 40 people studying right. the same thing, and really it became a critical point in my life. Most of the people I know did not take that route. They remained mm-hmm. where they were at, and I always wonder why. I don't know. I don't have a good answer mm-hmm. to that question. Maybe it was just that it was something pre-built in me. I don't know. I was talking to my husband, Jared, about this last night. And he's like, well, it sounds like your college experience kind of was kind of flushing out stuff that was already mm-hmm. present. Like, it's not that I went there and I became something else, but it definitely gave me vision. Mm-hmm. And I guess I need to totally talk about this, getting back to that. Moody was really founded, the founder, D.L. Moody, was very... He was very socially active. It was not, mm-hmm. it's not a liberal arts college. It's a Bible college, which sounds crazy, but they're there to train people for service in a sense. Mm. You're not walking out with English degrees or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And so part of D.L. Moody's vision was this idea of a practical Christian ministry. And I had amazing practical Christian ministries. Some people got stuck with ones that they didn't necessarily like, but I was involved in ones where we would go to elderly people's apartments, like on Clark Street in Chicago, and do their grocery shopping for them. And I loved that. Mm-hmm. Again, though, you're seeing a very different world than one I had brought up with. And then I did one that was at the Children's Place Association in near Humble Park, in Chicago, and they were just starting out at the time, and it was a kind of a place of refuge for children that were suffering the effects of a mother who had used drugs during her pregnancy, or HIV/AIDS infected children. We didn't mm-hmm. know if there were HIV infected kids there legally. We couldn't know that. Mm-hmm. But our goal was really to go in and for 2 hours a week and hold these children, play with them if they were older, and there were a lot of just people from the community that would also do that. So I think, again, there was this, it was really kind of saying, you know what, so there are some really crazy, horrible things in this world, but mm-hmm. we can do something. You just need to do something, act. Right, like, right. Just do something. It doesn't, you're not going to necessarily change the world in big ways, but in very small ways, and in ways that will be probably forgotten. You can just mm-hmm. do what you need to do at that time for the person in front of you that God mm-hmm. has given you. So I typically, my college experience was larger than I thought it was.
Yeah.
So thank you for your question, because I really did take a step back and be like, oh my goodness, it was much more formative than I had thought. So.
Well, and it sounds like it gave you a foundation of sort of creativity in how you look at service. Mm-hmm. I think so many of us, or, you know, coming out of high school, think the only way to serve is to find a soup kitchen. Mm-hmm. Whereas the truth of the matter is you can get groceries for an elderly person, or you can just carry those groceries across the street. If
or you can
some...
mow the lawn for, right. I mean, right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, hold a baby for a couple of hours.
Right.
And so that's, I love just hearing you talk about that and just kind of that basis of, you know, the desire to serve, but also then that creativity. Mm-hmm. When it comes to executing.
And I also like how you were not a mom then. And I think, you know, we never want to think that a mama bear means that you have to have children. Like, I think mm-hmm. if we're really tuned into it, we all have that mama bear spirit mm-hmm. from very early on. You were just open to it in a way that maybe other people weren't at that point. We have a journey, right?
Right?
Those people
might
have gotten there mm-hmm. or are there now, right. 20 years after you are. But maybe you were just so in touch with that kind of mama bear instinct where it's just like, I need to act. I see a wrong. I need to make
right,
even
right.
just a one person in this kind of huge world,
yeah,
make it right for this one person.
This very connected mm-hmm. huge world. Yeah. And that's what's really great about life, I think. And is about, you know, just those moments are different for everyone. Mm-hmm. It was a movie, a documentary that touched you mm-hmm. and it might be a conversation that touches someone else, or, you know, there's just so many ways that can lead to love, really.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, and getting back to the same teacher again, that kind of introduced me to this topic of white privilege in writing these papers. I remember one time I got a response and he said, your fear will keep you from doing things that you should do.
Oh,
and that's another thing that was just stuck with me for the rest of my life. I think that people, when confronted with things they feel like they need to help out with, don't know what to do mm-hmm. or are afraid mm-hmm. to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do think that people want to do what's right, what's
uh-huh.
good,
mm-hmm.
but maybe, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why maybe we don't act the way we should. But I do feel like fear can definitely play into that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm again, very grateful that he made that comment, because I do tend to be a much more, I'm not a very outgoing personality. So I think I just have to keep that in check, mm-hmm. and be, when I feel like, oh my goodness, I don't want to do this, like I have to put myself out there, that's so uncomfortable, I hate that, like, be like, okay, you can do this, it's okay, you know.
Are you talking specifically about the podcast right now?
I'm not. Maybe a little bit. No.
Well, how do you recognize that? Like, what, you know, it's so easy to feel things, but then just keep going and right. not really recognize it. So how, what speaks to you?
That is a good question. I think that gets into a larger, I think it's very important. We live in, we're just busy people. We're busy, busy people. And that's not bad, but I think we have to learn how to quiet ourselves. I actually read this, I've been trying to take a few minutes every morning to kind of sit in silence and listen and look. And then I've started reading Mary Oliver. I call her, she's my new starets. Mm-hmm. She's my new spiritual guide. And I read this beautiful poem, and she was writing about, she was going to leave and go up to this mountain and be by herself. And then she has this very funny line. She's like, I don't mean I'm going on a vacation. And then she says, really, I'm not even going anywhere, but I'm like, I'm going to this place of silence, and I'm right here. Mm-hmm. I'm right here doing my dishes. I'm doing, for me, because I am at home, I'm doing my laundry, but whatever you're doing, I think you can very diligently, it's very difficult work to cultivate silence, because even if you take your physical surroundings and make them silent, the noise within ourselves is, mm-hmm. is maybe much more difficult to deafen. And I think in order to be listening to that and be in tune with yourself, you do really need how to learn how to cultivate that. And again, I ebb and flow with that. There's times I'm much better at it than others, but I do think I remember a specific time I had started doing hospice volunteering, which I'm not doing anymore, but I had one patient and he had passed away, and I was assigned another. And the woman who was the hospice volunteer coordinator described him as being very disgruntled about his life situation. And I remember being in the car driving to meet him for the first time. And I thought, well, for the love, like, why am I doing this? Like, this man is dying and he's unhappy and I can't do this. And I thought, I'm turning around. I don't have to do this. I don't. Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn my car around and go home. And I didn't. And then I met him, and he wasn't disgruntled or angry. He was this beautiful human being. And we ended up having this very, he was such a gift to me, this a very amazing relationship. He was very, he was exactly what I needed. Like, I feel like, you know, again, I think so much we learn in service. We think we're going to help somebody else. Right. And really, it's the person that we think we're helping that is healing us. Mm-hmm. And I remember he had all these letters. It was kind of this crazy situation. He had all these letters from before I was born, which I always kind of joked. I'm like, I'm reading these letters from 1970. Wow. And from this priest that he was friends with, this correspondence. Oh. And he wanted me to read them. And so, I mean, again, it's very personal, you know, and opening things. And so, it was. And I would read these. And I remember one time I went in there and I was, of course, when you go in, you don't want to be bringing your stuff,
right?
You know, and I, whatever reason, I was feeling emotionally drained or something. I don't know, but feeling very emotional, but was able to be like, get myself in check. And I read this letter and I nearly was crying. So I'm like, this is exactly what I needed to hear. Mm-hmm. And I think of what a beautiful, mysterious thing that some letter that was never addressed to me,
right?
Some 40 years ago or whatever, could be used in that way. But again, I think because he was willing to also give of himself.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. No, I love that. I love the idea of looking that sort of apprehension in the eye and doing it anyway. And then just, again, like recognizing the beauty that can come along with that. And just in like being fully in that letter and in that moment. I mean, how often are you reading a book to a child and you're not like you're thinking of 10,000 other things, but like to allow yourself to be really present in that story and in that correspondence was the reason why it was such a gift, mm-hmm. and that you could reap that benefit of turning your day around.
Mm-hmm. When you were talking about, you know, when you're doing an act of service, so many people think like, oh, I'm doing this, but you end up getting something. It reminded me of like, that's often adoption language, right? Like, especially I think in the Christian vernacular, maybe mm-hmm. even a little more so than non-Christian adoptions, but just the whole idea like of we're going to save a child, but that child saved me. Mm-hmm. And I hate that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hate any adoption language that doesn't give into the complexities of it. But at the same time, you've adopted four mm-hmm. babies and they've just like totally enriched your life. Mm-hmm. So it's also hard to ignore that part of service as well. Like
right,
it's hard.
Right.
You also don't want to deny that that is part of the complexity. Mm-hmm. So do you think that your life of service before your kids had anything to do with the adoptions? Like what made you want to adopt in the first place?
I don't think it did. Adoption was, you know, I've met so many people that adoption was always on their radar. Adoption was never on my radar. Mm. I never really thought about it. Now, I think interestingly, I don't know why I didn't. My sister was adopted domestically. And again, like I said, my parents were much older when I was conceived. And I never thought that not being able to have a biological child was going to be an issue. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly it was. And it's been so long now that I can't remember how long. It seemed like forever at the time. But for several years, you know, tried to have a biological child. And we had certain standards that we kind of drew a line at certain points of what we would do and what we would not do medically. And we finally got to probably like the last straw. I mean, not to get so overly personal. There was nothing they could find. There was nothing mm-hmm. wrong with me. They could never be like, I mean, she's like, you have unexplained infertility. And I'm mm-hmm. like, of course I do. That's just, yes, of course.
Right, right.
And so we did finally the last thing we could do. And God bless her. The doctor was so confident that I was going to get pregnant. And I had this very minor surgery. And I mean, so minor that I told my husband to go to work. I was in the hospital, my mother-in-law and mother were there, but I couldn't quite come out. I was really having some reactions to the anesthesia. And finally I called my husband and was like, you have to get here now. Like, because they were talking about admitting me because I was so nauseated. And I think I had a bit of a drive, about 45 minutes at the time. And by the time he got there, I mean, I was fine, of course.
Right.
And then I think for him, he would say that was the point where he mm-hmm. was like, this is ridiculous. We are done.
Mm-hmm.
No one needs to have our biological child. We don't need to reproduce ourselves. And it was that point we started talking about adoption. So mm-hmm. It was very selfish, my reason for wanting, I just wanted a family. We wanted mm-hmm. a family. So I wasn't trying to save anybody, except I selfishly wanted children.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
That was kind of the road we took. And then everything kind of fell in place in very strange ways. You know, I mentioned adopting and a friend of mine said, oh, I know this family that adopted from Russia. And so she led us to Bethany Christian Services in Chicago, which is who we worked with Thomas's first adoption. So I will say this. I know you might hate it. They did save me. They do save
me. No, that's
me.
What I'm saying.
I think all of our children save us. But
exactly.
Not, that's
yes.
all of our children.
Exactly.
Not just
I think
because we're
yeah.
because of where they're born or whatever.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
It was a very unique time in my life at that point. And of course, I would never want you to tell me this when I was going through it because it was very painful.
Mm-hmm.
That this was the absolutely best thing for me. But mm-hmm. it really was. And I was working, and I was working at a school, a private school with children with mental and physical disabilities. And they were just amazingly beautiful. I mean, they're such gifts from God.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not trade that. I mean, if I had gotten pregnant when I wanted to get pregnant and stopped working according to my plan, again, I think there's that reality that, like, that gift would not have been in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I am a much better person because of that experience. Having said that, I think that then my kids came when they were supposed to come. Mm-hmm. And
because I know you now and love you so much, and I've seen you so happy, you know, and like living this full, beautiful life with such a beautiful family. But we all can relate to the idea of like, gosh, you are one of my closest friends now. And like, when I heard you talking was just, I felt like sick almost because I wish I could have been there just be there with you. I think as you get older and female friendships kind of mature, I think that can be really interesting. I'm just like, man, I feel like I know you so well, and yet I miss this, like, really, I want to insert myself in that and just be your friend during that part. And
it's like, I mean, I think really, again, of course, now I have all these beautiful children. I am thankful too, because I will say this, and I don't want to go off the topic or on the topic of infertility, but I have met so many people that have dealt with it. Now, typically what happens is women, they do get pregnant and they have their children. I have known a couple women that has not been the case. And I hope, I mean, they have said verbally, like, this is such a comfort because no one else understands what I'm feeling right now. And so I can look back and be like, well, thank God. Like, I do completely understand the feeling of desperateness and helplessness and the betrayal you feel that your body is doing that. And then also trying to, if you're a person of faith, trying to wrap your mind around exactly how that fits in. I remember being very angry. You know, you think, I'm praying, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing, and then not getting your way, which is like just like a very selfish child, right? Like just wanting to scream, like, you're not giving me what I want. So like, and I remember talking, we had a very interesting situation in Chicago. We had bought a house with friends, and so they lived below us, and we lived, it was like a duplex, but it was called a two-flat, so we lived above them, and my sweet friend, she probably won't care that I'm sharing this, I feel like she was constantly pregnant. I mean, like, and so it was this, and it, yeah, it was, yeah, so I would never feel anything bad, yeah. I mean, I wasn't angry or anything about it, like, but I think we both helped each other, because I had such access to her children, and she served that need, and then we were just some sort of refuge for her, I guess. But I'm not sure where I was going.
Well, I mean, how many of us have felt that way, right, though? I mean, I don't think that's an uncommon feeling for women.
And when you were talking too, it reminded me, we interviewed Jody Landers.
Right.
And she had said with her son Quincy, they realized it actually was hurting his faith to pray, like, oh, I hope this surgery works. I hope this gets better. Because then it didn't, and then what?
Right,
you know, and
right.
Then what's he think about
what's
God?
The answer, yeah.
She's saying, make it count. So yeah. When you look at your whole life, you prayed and you did all you could for biological children. Mm-hmm. Whereas if the prayer would have been, make this count, guess what? God did that. He made it count because he gave you, and not that should never diminish what you had to go through at all. And it doesn't diminish what Quincy has to go through. But I think I love that idea of shifting the focus, but again, I think it comes with maturity you can't get that when you're in the thick of it.
When
it's
you're
just
in it, right.
When it's in your face, it's so hard to get that clarity, but I loved that. And I feel like when you look at your life standing out the way friends often do, it's like, oh, we can see that hand that it certainly has made it count with you.
And too, at that time, I remember I talked, I'm an Orthodox Christian. And so I was talking to my priest, and again, he said to me, you will have to find joy in other people's, I mean, in this case, pregnancies. And that is so hard. But he was absolutely right. I mean, and I think that's taking something, whatever our blank is, our suffering, what's bothering us, trying to get outside of ourselves, transcend ourselves, our own ego, our own selfishness, or I mean, and not to say that pain and suffering, it's not necessarily selfishness, but to go beyond and actually find joy, not in our suffering, but in other people's happiness. I think it was very wise, difficult advice, and he was right. And it, again, something that has stuck with me all these years later. Go ahead. I completely
No, that's okay. So. I actually wanted to ask you about your faith life a little bit. So you are an Orthodox Christian. Tell us a little bit about how that shapes your, just the seasons of your family, the day-to-day kind of life that you lead. Because I know you're active in your church. Your husband's training to be a deacon. I know just from being at your house, you have beautiful icons everywhere. Like everywhere. Like you have them everywhere.
Yeah. Not in the bathroom, but everywhere else.
I think everywhere. One's been found in a toilet.
No. Yeah. 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 God help us. You never know.
I just remember a funny story with Elliot or Russell or something when they were.
An icon?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. There's been so many things in our toilet. I can't even tell you.
So yeah, talk to us a little bit about that.
I never know how to explain Orthodoxy. I mean, I think Christianity in general. What I want to say is it's a way of life. It's not a belief in a set of doctrines. But I think that's probably anyone that adheres to any kind of faith would probably say it's a way of life. It's how we live. And it has provided a framework. I think I'm really a person. Maybe I'm a person that needs a little bit of, I don't want to say someone telling me what to do, but someone giving me a little bit of structure and finding rhythm within that. And so I think that the Orthodox Church has provided that. I mean, on a daily level, our priest often says, before your feet even hit the floor, like, wake up, make the sign of the cross, say a prayer. Or just, you know, if it's like just, thank you, God, for this day. Mm-hmm. And the acknowledgement that, like, that God is there, you're waking to a new day, and be thankful. Like, it's a great way to start the day. And so I think that that's been helpful. We do try to live, because I do homeschool, it makes it a little bit easier. So we try to incorporate our faith while we have breakfast. I try to read a psalm every day. We take a moment to talk about what we're thankful for. I write in a book, which was a great idea from a friend of mine. And we'll read a Bible story. And then we do our morning prayers. And the prayers, that we're following the prayer, it's the prayer life of the Orthodox Church. So there's morning prayers, there's prayers at noon, there's prayers at evening. And so we do gather. We have an icon corner, which you're going to find in most Orthodox homes. And we gather together as a family, and we do these prayers that other Orthodox Christians are also doing. It's not something, and it's not that we're not individualized. You know, I always ask the children, is there anyone you want to pray for? Which is kind of this miraculous part of our life, because they'll pull the most random people. And I'm like, oh, that's amazing you remember that. Or they're really paying attention. And so it's not really pretty when we pray, because there's so much chaos. And I'm always trying to be like not feeling angry while I'm praying, because my kids are twirling around or someone's punching somebody. But it's just to try to be like, this is the spot we're going to gather together, and we're going to start our day with that. And that's just a very daily thing. I think even, you know, moving through the week as well, the Orthodox Church has Wednesdays and Fridays are regarded as days that we would abstain from eating certain things. Again, that is something that Orthodox Christians, whether they're in Russia or they're in Ethiopia or where they are, that's something we do as a larger body. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that we follow. It kind of sets our days of what we're doing. And then I think you get into just, there's so many, there's feast days for saints, and it really, way of running our life, I guess. We're following that cycle of the church rather than, I mean, I guess, not having any kind of framework.
I know that you love, you're an amazing hostess. You set an amazing table. You really do. You're a fantastic cook and just a wonderful entertainer. And so I feel like it's just a great fit, really, that you would have this kind of structure to your life that would involve feast days and, you know, small celebrations without, you know, making it a feast,
right,
marking moments with food at your table, some ritual, some candles, things like that.
Yeah, and I think, again, I was, in getting ready for this, I was thinking a little bit about why the food. Like, I think, I'm not, I'm not very artistic. Like, I don't have an art form, but I really do like to bake. And I think that's kind of an art form. I also think that, like, it also is a sense of completion. Like, you can start a task, you see the benefits of it. And in my life right now, where a lot of things go uncompleted, I think that is a fulfilling thing. But I think on a larger scale, I think, again, getting back to my faith, like, central to an Orthodox Christian, and someone asked recently, why do you go to church on Sunday? And I feel like for years, I really was like, why exactly? Like, how can I say that? And finally, I had an answer. And I'm like, it's the Eucharist. And the word Eucharist means Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, going to church on Sunday for me is not only being thankful, but then, like, the actual participation in the Eucharist. It's a meal. Mm-hmm. I think Jesus was constantly... Food is so much part of what is going on mm-hmm. in Christ's life. He's blessing food. It's multiplying his last meal. It's a last meal. It's a supper. And so I think there's something so sacred about feeding people. I think mm-hmm. there's also something very sacred about the idea of sitting around a table. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've heard stories where people are like, people can be so mad at each other, but if they can sit down across from each other and share a meal, like, those walls are broken down a little bit. I think also one of my favorite stories is there's this beautiful story in the Old Testament where Abraham and Sarah are waiting. They're, again, wanting a child. They're so old. And these three strangers appear to them. And, you know, again, getting back to the fear, they could have just been like, go away or whatever. But they feed them, like, this meal, and in that there's this revelation that Sarah is going to have this child. And I think there's something about again the stranger and the food and like the idea that you just don't know the gift, and maybe it comes not necessarily from someone you don't know, but I mean anyone that you have with you that you're sharing, you're partaking a meal with.
Well, and it makes me think about what you were saying earlier of just being open to those moments, of not being afraid to open your door, not being afraid to go to Cabrini Green, and just, like, allowing yourself that, the power of proximity.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, too, having had the distinct pleasure of eating anything you will make me. No, but when we were serving once at a pantry, you got a marriage proposal from a homeless person that you made delicious soup about. And I'm like, I know, I've often thought of marrying her myself. But then I say that kind of as a joke, but I really feel it. That feels like a missing puzzle piece, hearing why it means so much to you to cook and to be around a table, because I feel that amazing energy in your food. I really, really do. I mean, how often do I ask for your fudge? Like, and I have loved fudge. I'm usually, I don't discriminate.
Like, you can follow social cues and you're, you know, polite. Right. But, like, when it comes to fudge, like, where is it? I want fudge.
It's so true. But I think it's because I feel that. I feel always blessed by whether it be your soup or your fudge or, I mean, I'm trying to think of like all the things
like
that you've made.
Strawberry bread that you make.
I mean, it's just.
So good.
And
chocolate
your,
chip cookies.
And the, what did she make for in book club? Texas sheet cake, right?
Yeah. Your Texas sheet cake. Your black bean soup.
Black bean soup. I obviously love food, but I can tell when it's been made with love. And I'm telling you, I think that's what it is. I really genuinely mean that when I say, now that makes sense, why I feel that in everything you do, because it's important to you. And that's an act of service, because it's baking, especially, is a science. I mean, whereas cooking is not necessarily. Right. Baking is, and you always have 40 dishes when you're done, and it's always a hot mess. There's flour everywhere. It's an act of service because it, you know, the process may be fun, but then you're left and you're like, dang it, now I have to clean all this up. I never feel that part of it, when I'm eating your fudge.
So you're talking, Beth, about the things that sort of fill you up, like the Eucharist fills you up on Sunday. So what are things, and we're talking about how your cooking fills so many people. So what are things that nourish you? What are things that you need?
I think in the end, I mean, more sleep would help. About I'm trying to be less of a night owl. It's so hard. That was so bad last night. But I do think, and again, I'm going to just keep talking about my priest and everything, mm-hmm. but I was talking to him recently, and he made this beautiful thing. And this is not for, I mean, I want to just clarify this. This advice is not for everybody. I think if you, we're all so unique, and we all have our own paths and journeys to God that, I don't want to be like, this is what you should do or whatever. Mm-hmm. But he did say to me specifically, he says, you know, your liturgy is to be broken and distributed to your children. And you've got to fill yourself with something good if you're going to be able to do that. And so that really was part of my trying to set some time myself to myself in the morning. I think that has... And fill myself also with beautiful things. Like, mm-hmm. I had this experience recently. I read a phenomenal book, and it was very good, and I liked the writer a lot. But I was finding myself struggling a little bit with just, like, moments throughout my day of, I don't want to say depression, but, like, heaviness. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is going on? And then finally I'm like, it was this, I feel like it was this book because it was such a heavy topic. And so... Mm. Again, not that I regret reading it because it was good, but that is why I have to kind of turn to Mary Oliver mm-hmm. in the morning. Like, mm-hmm. I need goodness before I start my day. So that kind of, that, I mean, I think definitely for me, I think because also I'm an introvert, I think having, I need a little time to myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is the most, if I can do that and do something I love, whether like reading or even watching like an interesting documentary mm-hmm. or something like that. That's a positive thing. I think, too, getting away periodically from my family and being with friends, whether that means, like, just, like, seeing people locally for a little bit, just sometimes you just have to get out of the house.
And you are really good about that. And Jared is great.
He's great with that.
Because you do often, I mean, not all the time.
All the time. I do often, frequently. Yes,
but yeah, you are great about staying in touch with old friends and, mm-hmm. you know, taking weekends. So I think that's wonderful mm-hmm. that you feel like you can do that and that you and Jared have kind of worked that out, even though you have, you know, 4 children, you're still able to take time to care for yourself. So Beth, tell us about some just acts of kindness that have been done unto you and how that kind of made you feel.
I feel like I am a constant recipient of people's goodness. We live in an amazing neighborhood, and I cannot tell you because we are the kind of people that wait a very long time to shovel our sidewalks. How many of our neighbors have done that for us? And I'm always like, oh man, but I'm like, oh, thank you, Mr. Tom, again, you shoveled our sidewalk. And I mean, just neighbors that come, like we have a flat tire, they come help us change it. They bring gifts of food over to us, like incredible people. So like, I think in that very small realm of my neighborhood, just a constant givingness and willingness to give. I've had some amazing experiences, unusual experiences from unexpected places, which I think also is, I think a lot of giving comes from really unexpected mm-hmm. people and places. And I still marvel at it. I mean, it gives me pause each time it happens. But there was a situation with a family we loosely knew. They went to my parents' church. They knew my mom, my dad, and my mother-in-law. And their son died very unexpectedly. And for whatever reason, I don't know why exactly, they decided to, he had just a little bit of money. It wasn't, mm-hmm. it wasn't an extensive amount of money, but they wanted to give it to us. Wow. And I mean, it's such the gravity of to be given someone's money that, you know, their son's money. And that was amazing and so generous. And I don't know why they did that. And again, I think they gave without any, you have to give without any expectation of mm-hmm. what someone's going to do with that gift. Mm-hmm. And then I think, and what is God going to do? I don't know what God did with that gift, you know, but I think there's that really beautiful, miraculous thing. And then even recently, oh, just crazy things. Like, oh, we got a check one day. We were at this point in the month where, because I don't have an income, some months are a little dicier than others. And, you know, you're really staring down, like, how are we going to get groceries this mm-hmm. week? And out of nowhere, I get like a $250 check from my friend's sister that I remotely know. And she's just like, God just laid you on my heart, and here you go. Like, and again, you're like weeping because you're thinking like, like, I'm going to ask my mother for money for groceries. Yeah. We're 40 years old. Like, this is ridiculous. But, and then after that, our priest one Sunday handed Jared an envelope. And I remember we were driving, I don't know, we were driving to Dubuque to go hiking with the kids. And he just handed me the envelope. And I opened it up and there was 10 $100 bills. Oh, and I'm like, which I will say, like, again, it was right around the water party time. And I'm like, but I mean, which is why you got a $100 right. bill, because someone, and again, I yeah. like, I love the idea that, like, I don't know who gave that to us, but you just, you take that money, you give it, and then, like, look, the water party raises a bazillion, I mean, not yeah. a bazillion, a lot yeah. of money. So, like, I just think it's caused me, I'm grateful that there, we have those months that you just think, I don't know mm-hmm. how we're going to do this or what we're going to do. I think, A, it teaches me to be more, again, more aware of other people's, how other people live, and maybe be a little bit more sensitive. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, to feel like I am constantly receiving, I have got to constantly be giving. Like, and I mean, really, that's why I'm like, in a sense, I always feel like it's not even mine to begin with, and which is, I mean, mm-hmm. my mother constantly says that because she's also very generous to us. And you know, we're like, you don't have to do this or whatever. And she's like, it's not, it's just like, it is not even my money. It is God's money. I'm going to give it to you. And I think that's just a really good way to look at our money, mm-hmm. To be generous when we can. I mean, we have to be wise right. too, right? But be generous and then let it go and forget that you gave it and mm-hmm. just let it go.
Yeah. That reminds me of, what, how many years ago was that? Just 2 or 3 years ago when you threw like a pretend shower? I'm going to call it a pretend shower.
It was a pretend shower.
But you, it was at your mother's house.
It was.
And you invited, gosh, there was probably 24 women that were invited on a Saturday morning mm-hmm. in the spring. It was lovely. And you made quiche.
It was fun. We should do that again.
It was. Right. It was so much fun. And we all brought presents
right.
as if we were going to a girlfriend's baby shower right. or wedding shower. We brought gifts. And you then took all those gifts and gave them to the Humility of Mary.
Right, right.
And that was just such a fun morning of these people that you had gathered together and right. just this really kind of creative idea. Because we all, you know, no matter what where we're at in the budget in the month.
Right, right.
We can buy a bottle of lotion
exactly.
or a little pack mm-hmm. of, you know, whatever it might be. And so that was just so much fun and just another example of the ways that you have used that energy that you've been given to organize friends, be a hostess, and love the world. So, Tessie, I think we're going to have Beth come back.
We are. Absolutely.
I just talk too much.
No. Because I still want to hear about homeschooling.
Yeah,
no, I want to hear about like role models, people you admire. But we should end for the day here. So, Tessie, do you want to do the Mama Bear Dares?
Yeah.
Beth, thank you so much
You're
for being
welcome.
Here.
Thank you, Beth. It was so
You're
good.
You're filling my tank right now.
All
so
right.
So we're going to get out.
A little bit. Mama Bears, we dare you to cultivate a life of service outside of your kids. Whether it be delivering delicious homemade fudge to a friend who broke her foot, or a bottle of wine to a woman waiting on her adoption to go through. Maybe it's volunteering for a local shelter or becoming a role model for a kid in Big Brothers and Big Sisters. We dare you to gather your girlfriends and throw a shower for total strangers. We promise Mama Bears that if you live intentionally outside of motherhood, it will make a ripple effect throughout your life. So today we dare you to make that first step.
Thanks so much for listening, Mama Bears. We're grateful for the support that you've been giving us on our social media channels. So thanks for that. Please go ahead and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Check out our website to read more in-depth notes about Beth and all of our guests and to find links to books and blogs and all kinds of things that we've mentioned that we love. If you have a mama bear in your life who you think the world needs to know about, please send us an email and we'll be in touch. Until next time, have a great week.
Have a great week. Thanks, Beth.
Thank you so much, Beth.